happen.
I grew up with an alcoholic dad who's very loving. I don't want to overplay that hand. My dad was still an incredible dad. But I was small. I got teased a lot in school. I was bullied. I was an undersized athlete. I'm not particularly high IQ. School, I'm not like your son, Roger, you know, or my son, Max. School was didn't come easy to me. I was a C student, got a lot of D's too, and I tried. So I had to find ways to generate self-confidence because I didn't have it really naturally. And so my way of getting it was I'm doing things other people aren't willing to do. I'm willing to pay a price so high that other people aren't willing to pay. I must deserve a result other people aren't worthy of because I don't feel like I'm worthy of it. Initially, I didn't, but my efforts are worthy of it. And so this is an important lesson for everybody. As you're building your self-confidence up, what if you could begin to measure what you're worth based on how hard you work, on what your price is, rather than you think your own self-worth? My own self-worth trailed the efforts I made. I didn't think I was worth it all the time, but man, I'm doing stuff no one's willing to do. I'm making more phone calls. I'm after it in business more than anybody else in the office. I deserve to be the top guy here. And so I link the price to what I'm worth, to what I deserve. That's a huge breakthrough for me.
This week on American Real, we bring you one of the top podcasters in the entire world, Ed Milet. Ed Milet is an entrepreneur, peak performance expert, and the founder of The Ed Milet Show, a show I personally listen to every single week and receive tremendous insight from him in his teachings. We sit down from his seaside home in Laguna Beach, California, where he shares his incredible story. Ed is a great communicator and is able to voice his knowledge in a seamless way that is really understood by the masses. His life slogan is Max Out, which motivates others to make the most out of everything you do. You may hear some waves crashing in the background, but don't let that take away from this invigorating conversation. Sit back, relax, as I welcome the one, the only, Ed Milet.
This is American Real. I am Roger Brooks. My guest today is Ed Milet, entrepreneur, author, mindset aficionado, chairman of World Financial Group, and founder and host of The Ed Milet Show. In addition, you are a peak performance expert, one of the most sought-after speakers and premier business leaders in the world. Ed, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here with you, brother.
Thank you so much.
Long time in the coming,
Thanks so much.
I'm here.
And look, it's I know this sounds crazy, but it's just, it's so nice to be in your presence.
Oh, thank you.
Because when you listen to someone over time,
sure.
We talk about manifestation, visualization,
we
aspire, and then to have the opportunity, really, it's an honor, and thank you for allowing us in your home.
I appreciate it, and it was very nice of you, and I relate to that. I've had that same experience with other people, too, but I'm just an average guy who's been very blessed, so we can talk about any of those things today. But believe me, I'm no big deal. So, and by the way, your son's here too. Am I allowed to say that?
Absolutely.
So Roger's here too. It's great to have both Rogers here. So
no, thank you. And I don't mean it in a stardom way.
Sure.
It's more, you know, when we were youngsters and we looked up to our athletes,
sure.
That was different. Today, just to be able to put something together and for two people to sit down and have a great conversation because we're all on the same mission. It's to help others.
Right.
That's why we're on this earth. Right?
I'm going to learn a ton from you, too.
So this morning, you put up a post about combining growth and momentum. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sometimes we get stuck, right? We say we want to grow, but then the momentum's not quite there.
Well, you are either growing or dying, right? We all know that. But like, I don't think people understand to the extent that that's true. You have 37 trillion cells in your body. So every second, about 800,000 of them die and are replaced, right? So this is nature happening to us all the time. Your digestive tract, every 4 days, regenerates itself and is brand new, right? Your lung tissue, every 8 days, goes away and there's a new set of tissue there. Well, that should happen with our minds and our identities too. Those other things happen without us having to think about it and take control of it. With our minds and our identities, our self-confidence, our growth, we have to take control and be intentional about it, right? So the point that I was making there was, if you're not conscious of regenerating or replacing that, you will begin to die slowly in every single way. And so, but the kicker on growth is getting some type of momentum going with it. Momentum is like this invisible force. It's like a magnifier. It can take someone like me, and I wasn't saying this in any way with any humility earlier, it took an average person like me, and somehow over a long period of time, I've had some extraordinary things happen in my life. It's the combination of both growing and getting some momentum in my life. People underestimate, if they can start to get some small wins, what that momentum begins to look like as a magnifier to your growth, right? And it's something not talked about in personal development ever. Trust me, when people say, well, they got lucky. They didn't get lucky. They were growing, but they did probably get momentum.
Yeah.
And to finish, even in sports, you know, the Patriots just won the Super Bowl again. They win all the time, right? They're not always the best team in the NFL. The team that wins the MLB Major League World Series every year, I was at the World Series, watched the Red Sox this year. It's not always the best team, although they were this year. It's the team with the hottest pitching staff. They've got momentum. Or in the NHL, the hottest goaltender. Yes. Or the best defense. The Patriots got momentum on their defense this year. Momentum can take a really great team and make it world class. It can take a great person or an average person and make them world class. So it's the combination of both elements that move your life forward.
And for people that do get stuck in that, what do you recommend?
I mean, I have a lot of friends who used to be rich or used to be successful. And what happens is, this is important, when you do have it going, you have to fuel the flame. You have to keep putting kindling on the fire. Most people, they start to grow. Their external results begin to exceed their internal identity, like what they really think they're worth, and they stop doing the things that got them the growth in the first place. And all of a sudden, it seems coincidental, 5 months, 6 months, 8 months later, a deal doesn't close. You have a financial setback. Maybe a relationship breaks up, and your life comes right back down to where it was prior because you didn't sustain the momentum, right? The other part are people listening to this or watching who don't have anything good going, and I've been there many, many times too. I think the way you generate momentum is with small wins.
Yes.
We're always trying to do these huge things. Like I say, hunt elephants. You know what? Elephants are really difficult to go find. They're rare. You should go rabbit hunting. Go find small, and I don't mean this literally.
Sure.
Go get small wins. Do little things that create momentum. And people don't take this for granted. Get up when you say you're going to. Go to the gym when you say you're going to. If you're going to do the things you can control, self-confidence is nothing more than the process of keeping the promises you make to yourself.
Right.
That's what self-confidence is. It's a reputation with oneself that I do what I say I'm going to do. That's how you begin to get these small wins, whether it's I'm going to make 10 calls today or I'm going to eat a particular way, and then give yourself credit for it. You do these little things that start to stack in your life momentum, and you start, that's the catalyst for growth. You think, how in the world is what I eat in the morning have to do with me making money at my job? Just literally everything, right? Or what time I go to the gym is going to have an impact on whether I'm in a good relationship? Yes, believe it or not, these things create little wins and start to give you life momentum. Then there's another momentum that I hope everyone experiences. There's dream-catching momentum. So people ask me all the time, did you ever think you'd live oceanfront or have jets or multiple houses? Of course, no, I never even considered the concept of it, right? But what happens is when you start to catch a small dream, you know, I did finally save my first $50,000. I did get a particular promotion. You start getting dream-catching momentum. All of a sudden, it was $1 million, then it was $10 million, and then it was whatever the different things in my life. All of a sudden, these different doors open up, and you find yourself living like this. I'm an average person who got addicted to growth and was able to sustain my momentum. That's sort of the element for me that got me where I am.
That's so awesome. And back in the time where you weren't doing that, was there an aha moment that it clicked that you said, okay, now I get it? Or was it gradual?
Certainly, most of it was gradual. For me, there was a bottom. So almost like an alcoholic. People should know this. You know, I went so broke that I was broken, like literally. So it got to the point, I'm an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs have these false starts. You think you have it going, and then you don't. thinking of. You'll experience that with your show. It's going to be a great rating, and then, you know, it just happened to me in my show. So you get it going, then you don't. You get it going, then you don't. And when I didn't have it going, it got to the point where, boy, I mean, I tell you, we had our power turned off. I'd just gotten married. 6 months after being married, my wife had to go get a second job to support me as an entrepreneur. And I remember sleeping in. She went out to go to this second job in the morning. She comes back in tears and says, on top of everything, our power was already turned off, someone stole our car. I'm like, oh, my God, Lord, what are you doing to me here? Which was bad, except about 2 o'clock that afternoon, I learned it wasn't stolen. It was repossessed.
Mm.
About a month after that, the water was turned off. And you can have everything in your life going wrong. You don't have running water. You know, you literally start to live like a person third world. You literally do. We couldn't shower. We couldn't bathe. We couldn't cook. It ended up us being up in the morning. We would wake up every morning and we have to go down the stairs of my apartment complex because I had lost my home also. And my wife and I would take a shower in the pool, the outdoor pool at the apartment complex, and the outdoor shower there.
Wow.
Brush our teeth in there. I'd hold a towel up so nobody could see her. She'd do the same for me. And then just completely ashamed, I would walk back up the stairs in the morning and then go pretend to be. And it was a breaking point one morning. She left, and I just sort of snapped. I said, this is enough. Like, stop right now. Make changes. Grow up or give in. And it was just one of those moments. My back was against the wall, and I'm like, you always quit. You quit everything. You quit baseball. You quit going to get your master's degree. Every time something in your life gets hard, man, you quit, right? So this is the moment. Are you going to quit or not? And I literally just decided in that moment, I'm going to turn this around. And it wasn't immediate that it happened. But I had made the decision. Here's the decision I made. No matter what the price is, I'm going to pay it. What most people do when they're struggling is they're constantly negotiating the price. Is this worth it? Can I go another step? Everyone's telling you, why are you doing this? Why are you putting yourself through it? And you start negotiating the price, which is a poverty mentality. When I was broke, if I walk in a store, I didn't buy what I wanted. I would flip price tags over. What's it cost? What's it cost? What's it cost? Then I'd find the one I could afford. We do this in our life. What's this costing me? What's this costing me? And we're negotiating all the time. It steals our focus. It steals our joy. It steals our best performance. What happened that day was I stopped negotiating. That's it. Whatever the price is, as long as it's legal, ethical, and moral, I'm going to begin to pay the price. It's a foregone conclusion. I'm not quitting. I'm never quitting, period. So I might as well stop playing this game in my mind. Let's go. And that's a shift probably a lot of people watching this need to make, to stop negotiating the price. If you're going to do it, it's going to be ugly, nasty. It's going to get worse before it gets better. So just decide right now. Are you going to pay it or not? Stop negotiating.
No doubt. And I literally have the chills right now because I've been there.
Yeah, I can see it on your face.
Yeah. We've been there. Our power was shut off.
Oh, really?
You know, oh, yeah. We've been there. Mm. But I guess, you know, as you tell your story, I think about, don't you feel that had to happen?
100%.
It had to happen.
It had to happen.
Part of your journey.
Part of my journey. And I think also it gives me such gratitude now.
Yes.
So one, I learned a lot about myself during that time. I'm proud of me.
Yes.
You know, to think about it, I think my wife's proud of me. Probably more than a nice house is my husband pulled out of that.
Yes.
You know, and I want that for the husbands and wives. Listen to this. Yeah, it had to happen. It gives me gratitude. It's an interesting anecdote. It doesn't happen all the time, but often. That's the ocean right there. People could probably even hear the waves crashing. One of my other homes is on a lakefront. And that body of water is spectacular. And when we first moved here, I'd wake up in the morning and go, you got to be freaking kidding me, right? Like, but I got to tell you, more mornings than that, this is going to sound like just strange, but when I have little moments of gratitude that I'll never forget, and it happens not every morning, but many. When I pull the shower in the morning, I pull that lever and the water comes out of the shower, I have this trigger. I'm like, thank you, Lord, just for the water. Because I know what it's like when I pulled it where the water didn't come out.
Yes.
I'm more grateful for the water coming out of my shower every single morning or when I'm brushing my teeth. It's little triggers than even the ocean behind me. And I wouldn't have that appreciation nor hopefully a little bit of the humility or the gratitude had I not gone through that time.
Yeah.
So it was completely part of the plan. I had to go through it. I think I enjoy my life now more as a consequence.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
I saw your post Saturday night. You were with a couple buddies.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Rob and Christopher.
Rob Dyrdek.
Right, was that this past weekend?
It was Saturday.
Okay, and looks like you're having great conversation. Sure. You said you had a lot of laughs, belly laughs.
Yes.
But let's talk about peer group.
Okay.
I know you talk about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just try to relate this.
Sure.
I'm trying to elevate my peer group.
Sure.
It's great to be able to sit down with you and many other guests because that helps us.
Good question.
Listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for people to start to really take a look at who their closest network is?
Probably the most important thing that I've been addicted to and obsessed with is who I'm around. It's something that to this day, I'm not trying to upgrade people, but I am trying to get with people who push me, see me as a higher, see my capacity better. See, you have this identity thing in you. And it's like, at least in my opinion, it's like the thermostat on the wall right there. You've heard me say this before.
Sure.
We might as well just say this now because it relates to this. That thermostat sets the temperature of your entire room here. And your identity is that thermostat. It sets the temperature of your life. So in this room, if we open these doors, which we did, and cold air blows in here, if that thing's set at 75 degrees, it regulates the temperature no matter externally what comes in here. This room's going to be 75 degrees. If we open that door and it was super hot, the air conditioner would come on, cool it to 75 degrees. That's what you do in your life. How you feel about you, your identity, the thoughts, concepts, and beliefs you hold to be true about you is your thermostat. It's your identity. So it's not the external stuff that blows into your life that sets the temperature. So what happens is if you don't change this temperature, but the external results heat up, you're 75 degrees, but boy, you're making more money. Your relationships are going great. Everything's clicking. You're in better shape than you've ever been. So the external results are here, but the thermostat's still sitting here. Over time, you will cool your life right back down like that thermostat does to about where it was. Everyone listening to this and watching relates to it. They've done it. Consequently, if things go really bad, you're broke, you're out of your worst shape of your life, you find a way to heat it back up to where you are. So the key is altering the 75 to 85 to 90 to 200 to 500. The way you do that is proximity to people whose thermostat settings are higher.
I love that.
And so that's what I do. I do it regularly.
And it never stops, right?
Never stops.
This is a lifelong
acceleration. I want to have some friends that I'm uncomfortable around. I want to have some friends that see me and expect of me more. And so this is another thing. People say, well, how do I do that? You have to be intentional. You have to begin to look for them, seek them. Go to places where they are. Where do they go to coffee shops? Are there groups you could join? Are there social, something like, for example, My Max Out Universe, that community. Start commenting in the community, meeting people, collaborating, engaging with them, listening to the right podcast. That's a power of it. Podcasts are great. Social media is great. But friendship is the ultimate association. And so this is mandatory. I can tell you, I don't think there's any chance whatsoever the really big things have happened in my life without this group of people that I'm constantly blessed enough to surround myself with, like Rob that night at Saturday. The conversation is unreal. I mean, about we break down personal growth and our strategies and our goals and business things we're working on, and I get feedback from him. He gets it from me. It's just I cherish those conversations. I leave them so energized. And you have other friends you leave down.
Yeah.
Or you've gossiped about people, or it's like, remember when? And all you're doing is reminiscing. It's interesting. One thing where you'll know you're with the right people is you rarely spend any time speaking about other people, and you rarely talk about the past.
Love that.
You really do. You're really talking about the current and the future. And if you're in conversations regularly, it's like, remember when, or that guy, or this.
Get out.
These are not conversations that serve you. So
look, we have a few things in common. One being baseball. I also played baseball.
Yeah.
You played it at a much higher level, but it was a love of my life that I worked really hard at it as a young guy. Second is I also worked with the underprivileged youth. Yeah. So we had this program called the Mayor's Action Team, and I was in like 11th and 12th grade in high school. Oh. And in the summers, we had a group of underprivileged kids, and we just kept them busy. And we would go do certain projects in the city. But it was really good because I had the opportunity to see. And we grew up pretty lower middle class.
Me too. Yeah.
So, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. But I saw the difference between what we had and these people did not have.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about
That's
this.
Wonderful.
Thanks. And I know you've talked about this before. But again, how did that time in your life prepare you for today?
It altered me. So what happened was I was broke. And I get emotional about this because it just changed my life. I ended up, my dad had just gotten sober.
Oh.
He's been sober for like 30 years now. But I grew up, my dad was an alcoholic. He's my best friend. But he's been sober a long time. But so my dad came back from an AA meeting and said, I got you a job. I was back living at my parents' house in the bed I grew up in with the teddy bear and the poster on the wall, completely losing. And he goes, I got you a job tomorrow morning. McKinley Home for Boys is in San Dimas. I'm like, what is it? He goes, I don't know, but go. 6 a.m. I walk in there. I say, hi, I'm Eddie Milette. I'm here for the job. They're like, what job? I said, I don't know. My dad sent me here. They're like, well, we don't know who your dad is. Come back when you know what the job is. And I start to hit the door, and I go, I'm really sure someone's here to hire me. They're like, well, you ought to know what the job is or who it is. I go, I don't, the guy's name is, it's Ray. They go, no. And I go, well, I know he's like an alcoholic. They go, oh, Drunk Ray. Yeah, Cottage 8. So I go to Cottage 8, and within this second, there's a door. I open the door, and what I didn't know that was behind that door is my entire future. My entire life changed. Baseball didn't work out. My first dreams didn't work out. Open the door. It's early in the morning before school. My boys were 8 to 10-year-old boys, wards of the court. They were orphaned or removed from their family. They're molested, parents incarcerated or dead, 10 of them, and they immediately stopped running around. And what these boys wanted was someone to love them, believe in them, help them, teach them to live their life better, contribute to them. And that's exactly what I do now.
Yes.
And it started with 8 to 10-year-old boys. These boys have something really interesting. They have these eyes. If you grow up with any kind of abuse or dysfunction in your family, I had this philosophy that you could just see it in someone's eyes. And what was amazing was all the adversity in your life prepares you for something. I could connect with these boys because I have those eyes. My dad's alcoholism is what prepped me. Not the same dysfunction, but I knew what it was like to be a little boy and have anxiety.
Yeah.
And to not know exactly what your family life was going to be like every day. And we connected. And in that time that I worked there, I fell in love, not with recognition or money or winning or ego like baseball gave me. I go, oh, what fulfills me is helping people, contributing, believing, leading, coaching, mentoring people. And I just figured a way eventually to parlay that into a business career. My business came after that.
Okay.
But if I didn't have that experience, I'd have never been successful. But I've been an ego-driven, money-driven. There's nothing wrong with being money-driven.
Sure.
But somehow, if you're going to be sustain a long-lasting career in business, it has to be about contribution to people. And that taught me it.
I love that story, Ed. And don't you think most people, when we grow up, we are ego-driven?
Yes.
And
I still am to some extent, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
Right. But don't you feel a shift happening?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just me, or is there a shift happening in the world with the Ed Milettes of the world and everyone else that is on this, you know, self-improvement, self-growth?
Yeah.
I feel it.
It is, and I'll tell you something interesting. I had this conversation Saturday with Rob. I don't think he would mind me saying this, but he and I debate this all the time. What drives you? And we're both have said for years, I'm contribution-driven, right? I want to make a difference. That's what drives me. And he called me one day, and he goes, you know what, dude? I think we're both BSing. And here's what he said to me. He goes, we're both recognition-driven, or significance-driven, but we get our significance by serving people. So there's a little ego involved. I think it'd be a lie to say there's no ego.
Right.
The question is your ego attached to your possessions? Is your ego attached to how many people follow you on social media? Is your ego attached to who you know? Is your, you know, is it a money thing, your status? Or is, to some extent, your significance attached to contributing to
people? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That just hit me.
It hit me.
And that's what I feel.
Of course. It's not that you don't want to be well-known from the show.
Right.
It's not that you don't want to be significant. But you want to get it by contributing
exactly.
to people.
Exactly.
Yeah, me too.
Wow. And we need to turn more people onto that.
Correct, Amundo. And we said it to each other. It was like, oh. Like
yes.
an aha moment
yes.
for both of us. And every time we get together, he's like, significance contribution. I'm
yes.
like, me too, brother.
Okay.
And we go through to friends. Like, we're like, what about Brady? Tom Brady, right? Of course he wants significance, but he wants to do it by contributing to the team and winning, right?
Yep.
The difference between him and other ego-driven quarterbacks is their significance is about their stats. His significance is about winning as a team.
Mm.
So they're both significance-driven,
sure.
but his is about the wins and the team and contributing.
Yep.
Many other players, selfish players, it's about them,
yep.
their stats, their accolades, their possessions, their money, whereas that's the rub. And so you're right, there is a shift. The really fulfilled people get their significance by contributing to other people.
Wow,
yeah.
Love that. Your buddy Grant Cardone just mm-hmm. had his 10X this year.
Mm-hmm.
You were the keynote last year.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
How did that impact you? What was that like?
Speaking at the TEDx?
Yes. I
yeah.
mean, you know, massive.
Well, I loved it. I'm fortunate that I had spoken to really large crowds before that. So far larger than that one, although he just stuck a really large
yes,
crowd on that
for sure, yeah.
But I've been fortunate to speak in front of 40, 50,000 people at a time before. What was wonderful about that crowd that was a little bit different was it was exclusively, it seemed to me, people who were really hungry to turn their lives around. And I love being around. I love the energy level of entrepreneurs. I love the energy level of people who are trying to do good in the world. What's so wonderful about this space is that there's this movement that is gaining steam with the leaders in it, of good people helping good people, like a grassroots movement. You know, for decades, it seemed to me, everyone looked to a political party or a political leader or someone in the media. They're going to change the world. I think people finally have figured out that's not what it's going to be. What it's going to be is real people helping real people, a grassroots movement, a force for good in the world, where large groups of people say, I want to contribute to people. I want my business, my message, my life to contribute to people. I want to get significance. I want to make a lot of money doing it. I want to help my own family. But this force for good to contributing. And so that room was filled with people who do that, and I love being in rooms like it. So
that's awesome. Talk to us about Max Out Performers. The name alone is infectious. I love it.
Thank you.
Interested how you came up with the name. Was it just one day saying, Max Out? Is that something you always said?
No. My son's name's Max.
That's right.
So part of it was that. But no, it was, I had caught myself for a window of time going, man, I maxed out that talk. I'm really hard on myself. So most of the time when I give bigger speeches, or even if we do this interview, inside the mind of a weirdo like me, I will reminisce at some point today on what I could have done better, what I could have said better. You probably do it too.
Sure.
I'm really, really hard on myself.
Yeah.
And, but I had had a little run there for a while. I was like, man, I maxed out that workout. I maxed out that speech. I maxed out that meeting. I caught myself saying it. And then Max goes, I like that, Dad, because my name's in it. And I had made a couple videos on social media. I go, Max Out. I went, whoa, I like that. And it kind of, people started responding back, Max Out. And I'm like, there's something in here.
Yes.
And it sort of, it actually was a message and a tagline that kind of took off without me.
Okay.
I didn't even realize I was saying it. And then it's, and what it means really is getting the ultimate out of something, out of anything in your life. And it's become a standard for me. And that's why I'm hard on myself. When this is done, I'll go, did I max out that interview or did I just do so-so?
But that's you. You're always at the highest level.
I want to be.
Yes.
Yeah,
you're striving to be.
That's my standard.
Yes.
And we get our standards. In our life, we don't really get what we would hope for. We get what our standards are. And so now my standard isn't perfection. I think perfection is a fake standard. I think it's the weakest of all standards because it's unattainable.
Unattainable.
It's usually the greatest excuse not to begin, right? But I want a maxed out standard, meaning it's the ultimate of what I'm capable of in that moment. Doesn't mean my max out level at the gym right now, it's going to be better in 2 years. My ability to speak, my ability to contribute, my philanthropic efforts will be maxed out higher. But in this moment, what's the best I have? And I calibrate and measure everything against that.
Yeah, I love it. You also talk about paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to pay the price.
Yep.
Nothing comes easy in life.
Right.
To sustain anything,
correct,
you have to pay the price constantly, right? We
yes.
can't get comfortable.
Yes.
We can't conform.
Right. Conformity is, conformity to me is the ultimate form of cowardice. So
totally.
it's the most cowardly thing in the world to do is just to conform to what everybody else is doing. It's not giving into a fear. But for me, you know, the price paying part, here's what I kind of would recommend to everybody. So what if you could get off on doing that? What if you could get off on paying the price, right? Because the fact of the matter is, it's not just about paying the price. It's about giving yourself credit for doing it. So I kind of, I'm nuts. It's like, I liked it. I love when I'm doing something I don't think other people are willing to do. So I have this tagline I say to myself that I recommend to people, which is my self-confidence. Look, I grew up with an alcoholic dad who's very loving. I don't want to overplay that hand. My dad was still an incredible dad. But I was small. I got teased a lot in school. I was bullied. I was an undersized athlete. I'm not particularly high IQ. School, I'm not like your son, Roger, you know, or my son, Max. School was didn't come easy to me. I was a C student, got a lot of D's too, and I tried. So I had to find ways to generate self-confidence because I didn't have it really naturally. And so my way of getting it was I'm doing things other people aren't willing to do. I'm willing to pay a price so high that other people aren't willing to pay. I must deserve a result other people aren't worthy of because I don't feel like I'm worthy of it. Initially, I didn't, but my efforts are worthy of it. And so this is an important lesson for everybody. As you're building your self-confidence up, what if you could begin to measure what you're worth based on how hard you work, on what your price is, rather than you think your own self-worth? My own self-worth trailed the efforts I made. In other words, I didn't think I was worth it all the time. But man, I'm doing stuff no one's willing to do. I'm making more phone calls. Yep. I'm after it in business more than anybody else in the office. I deserve to be the top guy here.
Yeah.
And so I link the price to what I'm worth to what I deserve. That's a huge breakthrough for me.
Great lesson. Thanks for talking about that because it is so important. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Max Out Yourself.
Okay.
And then where are you taking this whole movement of Max Out?
Okay.
Do you have a vision for that?
I do. I want to help a billion people around the world before I'm 55. I'm 47. I want to give them the tools and the resources to be the best possible version of themselves they can be, the maxed out version of it. And so I wrote the book. The book's only 100 pages. I did it because people don't seem to be reading like they used to. So I thought, could I write a book that you could read in a day or two where every single page has content on it?
And it's awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
It really is.
And I don't need to make any money on it. So for like your audience, they go to maxoutbook.com. If they put in the code maxout, I'll just buy the book. There's no upsell after it, by the way. Just you get a free book. Mm-hmm. I'm not in this space to make lots of money. I'm in this space to serve. I kind of feel like I spent the first 45 years of my life or so sort of building my resume and my, you know, my life. I want to spend the next 45 helping other people build theirs. So that's why I create all these tools and stuff. And so the book was sort of the first layer of like, here's the foundational phase. Here's my daily habits. Here's my rituals. Here's the thermostat. Here's how you build self-confidence. And what I want to do now is write more, create more content, grow my YouTube channel, grow my podcast. When I say podcast, I also do just original audio trainings on there. I just want to get these tools in people's hands. I do feel like the personal development space is a little bit thin on specifics. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of memes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of like, don't get discouraged or live your dreams or, you know, it's a lot of sayings. And I don't mean to be critical of the people in it. They're wonderful people. They've helped lots of people. They seem to repeat themselves a lot to me. And so I wanted to be the person that, one, had the best example of what you could have if you do these things, which is my own life, and then do it in an inspirational way, but really give you tangible, tactical details, real strategy.
Because that's going to elevate it.
Correct.
That will, and others will help. Will follow.
That's the deal.
Yes.
Set this standard. Right. And I've watched it. I've seen. Mm-hmm. I am really encouraged by the caliber of content I see other people starting to create.
It's starting to come out. Yep. Yeah. Great. The preface of your book starts out talking about time, mm-hmm. the number of seconds and minutes in a day.
86,400.
Then you recently dedicated an entire episode to this. You talked, you know, which I love, mm-hmm. you talked about, and it was called The Secret to How I Get 21 Days in a Week.
Yes.
I love this. You break up the day. There's 24, it's not 24 hours. It's, I put 3 days in one day.
Correct.
Ed, that's brilliant.
Thank you.
And I told a couple of friends about it, mm-hmm. and you could tell the friends that are intimidated by it and the ones that say, yeah, maybe that can work.
Sure.
So can you just talk a little bit about this? Because this is another gem that's really important and can make a drastic change in your life starting today.
Immediately you can implement
it.
So I know my deficiencies. So I'm like, how do I compete with people more talented than me, further ahead than me? I started on third base and I didn't, whatever it is. And so you got to condense time frames. And so we've all had days where we're like, man, I've got more done by noon today than I've done in a full day before. We've all had those days. You're like, man, it's 10 o'clock. I've got more done today than I've done in a full day before. So I started thinking, why is a day 24 hours? Like, who says it's a 24-hour day? Like, I want to change the paradigm in my own life. Why? Because the sun goes around or the moon, you know, the whole how long a month, how long a day. I thought, this is BS. They just made this up. 24 hours is a day. Screw it. My day is now, my first day is from 6 a.m. to noon. That's a day. And I begin to measure time. Most successful people, all the athletes I coach, the entertainers I coach, doesn't matter who it is, the business people, the elite of the elite that I work with, they get so much done and shrink the time frames down. So I thought a day is 6 a.m. to noon. That's my first day. I'm going to get a full day's work done in that day. Full day's workout, phone calls, meetings, contacts, success. And I shrunk my day down. My second day is noon to 6 p.m. That is day two for me on Monday. Day three is 6 p.m. to midnight. And I literally measure my time that way. And then I have a clock that goes off in my head that's been trained. The top of every hour, it's so psyche crazy, but
I love this.
About the top of every hour, a little clock goes off for 3 seconds. What have I done in the last hour? What have I done to contribute to my goals? Have I got to my close to my outcomes? What course correction do I need? It just happens, top of every hour, I recalibrate. What most people do that are average, January 1st every year, they go, where am I at? They take an inventory and course correct, set some new goals. People that are pretty good do it at the end of every month. You meet really good people, they get together on Sundays and go, where am I at? Once a week. Really top performers, end of every day before they go to bed, go, where am I at? Max out performers, every hour. Where am I at? They shrink the time frame down. So I have, my days are 3 days in what is a normal person's day. Yeah. What I get done, you've already watched this since you've been here. So what I get done in a six-hour window is bananas. And by the way, that also includes fun, family, recreation. I was at the Grammys last night, right? That was, I spent my second and third day yesterday. I had 2 days at the Grammys. Everybody else had one, right? So I had a blast yesterday. So I put my fun in there too, but I just changed the way I calibrate time. And my life, that's been over a decade, my life's results and happiness, fulfillment, fun, friendships, wealth, all of it is an indication of what's possible if you will begin to calibrate time different. If you're going to calibrate time 24 hours a day like everybody else in the world, you're going to get their life.
Yeah.
Change the way you look at time.
How is it affecting the people around you, immediate people?
The immediate people around me are far happier because they get more of me, right? And I don't want to have it come across like I'm this mega achiever. I'm lazy. I have Sundays with Netflix, believe me. So I have my lazy time. In fact, I would suggest that probably I'm so crazy about this because I do like laziness so much.
Okay.
I'm not an overly disciplined person. I had to develop a lot of habits, rituals, and disciplines that overcame my lack of not loving being lazy. I mean, I love watching TV. I love sleep. And so I had to build in these rituals in my life that served me. I think it's enriched my children because I've watched, you know, I'm not bragging about them, but my children are achievers too. They're good people. I also think that it makes you appreciate time more.
Yes.
The more you're just focused on time, the more you have an appreciation for it rather than just wasting it. And so I love time with you today. Right when I got down here, I'm fully engaged with you, right?
Yes.
Fully engaged with Roger. I want to be present when I'm there. The key thing is people ask for balance all the time. I just think it's a complete fallacy. I don't know that it's, I don't think seeking balance is bad, but I don't even want to, I think balance is boredom. If everything's perfect all the time, the great life, things are spiking all the time, right? What I want to be as a busy person is present. So if I'm with you, I'm present. If I'm with my children, I'm present. Most people, when they're with their kids, they're thinking about work. When they're at work, they're thinking about bills at home. When they're at the gym, they're on their phone texting for business. Be where you are. Don't worry about balance. Just be present in the moment you're in. I think you'd find your life is more rewarding.
Speaking of balance, you just had a great interview this week with Jessica Mendoza. It was brilliant. I want to compliment you because really, I thought it was one of your best interviews.
Thank you.
From being on that side, she was incredible. And look, my parents watched that interview.
Oh, they called
me and they said,
"Oh, that's wonderful.
This Ed guy is amazing, and she's amazing."
Tell him thank you.
Yeah, no, I will. But so I wanted to get your perspective on a couple things. She talked about work-life balance.
Yes.
She said there's no such thing.
Correct.
Isn't that cool that you just said the same thing?
Yeah, I loved when she said it. I'm like, good, we align on
exactly,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You said she was special, meaning unique.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help people get to where they could find their own passion based on their unique abilities, like a Jessica?
Yeah, well,
because we all have it in us, right?
We all do. We're all born. I'm a Christian, so I'll just use it from my perspective, but it doesn't matter what your faith is or if you have any faith. I believe we're all born with some form of giftedness, something. It could be your intellect. It could be your listening skills, your speaking ability, your humor, your physical beauty, your articulation, your intensity, your passion, nurturing, kindness, your faith, your strength, right? Your calmness under pressure. There's all kinds of different things. Just your intention can be a gift. A happy person figures out what their gifts are, and they use those gifts in the service of other people. And so what most people are doing is where's my passion? I don't know what my purpose is. Stop that. What are you gifted at? And stop being so hard on yourself. Don't give me the list of a million things you're not great at doing. What are things you're good at? Give yourself some credit. If I said, what are two or three things you just know you're good at? I mean, you've heard it before.
Absolutely.
Man, you're hilarious. You're so sweet. You're kind. You listen so well. Wow, I love how deep your voice is. Whatever it is, right? What are your two or three math skills, engineering skills, problem-solving skills, right? Maybe you're great at getting people to collaborate and connect people. If you figure out what those two or three things are, and then you begin to project that towards the service of other people, you'll find your pathway to fulfillment eventually. And maybe it's going to require you to try 25 different things using those gifts, but I guarantee you what you're supposed to be doing involves those gifts you were given.
Yeah.
Promise you that.
And Ed, let's talk a little bit more about service. I just interviewed David Meltzer. I know you were with him.
I love David.
He's awesome. He's all about service.
He is.
I don't think enough people are thinking about this.
Yeah.
I know I didn't for the first half of my life.
Right. Me either.
So now that I'm onto it, and again, it's just about energy.
Mm-hmm.
When you put this, the energy out there of service and helping people comes back. But
correct.
Can you talk just a little bit deeper about how that has impacted you?
It's the only thing that sustained me. So happy, people say, wow, material things won't make you happy. That's a lie. It's a flat out lie. But happiness is fleeting. It's short term. We've all bought a nice pair of shoes and been happy in the moment or bought a car.
Right.
So to say when you buy something material, it doesn't make you happy, that's not true. But the problem is people are seeking happiness as opposed to what they should be seeking, which is fulfillment. Fulfillment, which is sustainable long-term for me, the only thing that's fulfilled me, because happiness on any car I bought, even my jet, even my house, is fleeting. It goes away eventually. What's never gone away is how rewarded, how at home, is the best way I can word it, at home I feel.
I've heard you say that before.
When I'm serving people. And so that is a difference. People say, I don't even know what my gifts are. Give you one tip on that, maybe, that you could consider. Maybe you don't see it in you. Maybe you have such low self-esteem, you're not going to give yourself any credit for any of your gifts. So let me tell you a way to maybe uncover what your gifts are. You'll never heard this before. Who do you admire? Who are some of your heroes? If you begin to think about these people you admire, it could be Dr. Martin Luther King. It could be one of the presidents of the United States. It could be a particular athlete. What I will submit to you is the things that you admire most about them are things that you intuitively know are true of you. Man. They've taken that gift and maybe used it on a larger scale or in a completely different... If you said, Dr. King was so inspiring, or Dr. King just loved people, he loved all people, do you? Now, maybe he used it for a political movement. You're going to use it to start a charity on the side.
Right.
So when you begin to... If you can't find your own gifts because you just can't give yourself any credit... So if you look at their gifts and the things that they're great at, if you look inside them, because it's easy for you to say, I love this actor or this entertainer or this political person or this speaker or this person at my church or this parent of mine, what I admire about this hero of mine, what I love my mom so much is she has this, right? I guarantee you those two or three things that you admire about people are things that you intuitively see. They're a reflection of you. Mm. We admire people oddly who possess the same giftedness we do. That's why we all have different role models and heroes.
Sure.
Someone says, I admire so much this particular athlete. People go, why would you, an athlete? Oh, he's so tough, or he's resilient. He's resilient. That's what you see in yourself.
Love
and
that.
So now you're not going to apply it on a football field. You're going to apply it in the service of other people some other way.
Right.
So that's a pathway to figuring out what your gifts are.
Great.
Okay.
You weren't born to be average.
Yes. Nobody was. So that goes back to these gifts, right? Nobody was born to be average. When you were a little baby, the doctor didn't slap you on the ass and go, hey, mom, here's an average one. They didn't say that. There's something extraordinary about you. Doesn't mean you're going to be rich or famous. It means you were put here in the world. This is true. I mean,
yes, 100%.
You were put here in the world to make a difference, to make it better, to contribute. You matter. Your story matters. Your soul matters. Your journey matters in your life. You matter. And most people in the world, I think, they really just feel invisible. I want you to know you're not invisible. I promise you there's a God who sees you. There's a God who loves you. And there are other people in the world who see you, love you, and will believe in you at some point in your life. So you were born to do something special with your life. Even you, even one of you watching this right now goes, man, not me. You don't know, man. I'm in an apartment somewhere. I've been struggling for years. Yes, you. You're supposed to do something great with your life. It might be the most small, subtle thing in the world. I was in a restaurant last week in a little Italian restaurant. There's 8 tables in this place. The man at the table next to me, the waiter turns to me, pours my wine. He turns to the other man. Very calmly, the man goes, I'm having a heart attack. Please call an ambulance. And then he boom, passes out right into his food, falls onto the floor, right? And his wife was there. She was relatively calm too. But there were people in that place, not me. I'm not trained that way. There were people in that place that immediately came to his aid, immediately comforted him, immediately supported him. Within 6 minutes, the ambulance. I posted it on Instagram, as a matter of fact, pictures of the ambulance. This man lived, and he, my understanding is that that night they told us he was okay. But I could tell you, those people made a difference in his life.
Yeah.
You say, well, my life doesn't count. In a moment like that, your life mattered everything to that man's life. So there are moments in your life that you were put here for. And the more you find those moments, they may not be someone having a heart attack in front of you, but I promise you, you matter, you count, and you're not invisible.
I love how you talk specifically to women about being beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I think women have a tough time.
Yes.
They really do. Because, you know, it's so, I don't know if you want to call it competitive or they feel down about themselves. But I love how you talk about that. And we need to do more of this.
We do.
Because everyone is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You can make yourself better if that's a goal. Or, you know, if you want to improve your weight or your diet or whatever. But talk about that. Why is that important to you?
Well, we live in a world today that messages everybody that they're not enough, men and women, but women particularly. The messages to women about them not being enough and them feeling invisible. So in a woman's case, they don't look the right way. Something's too big or too small, right? If they're too intense, then they're overbearing. If they're passive, then they're not strong enough. And so there's messaging after messaging after messaging. Then you add social media, these other things. Women are constantly being told, really, you need to change. You're not enough. You would say, well, that conflicts. I thought we were all supposed to change. A happy person accepts themselves as they are. I'm enough right now. Because you've delivered this moment in your life. You're enough for it, I promise you. The question is loving and accepting yourself now enough that you want to change moving forward. Not that I'm not enough now, I better change. I'm not enough of something. And so I tell women all the time, you're beautiful, you're special, you're made the way you're supposed to. Men don't hear, hey, you got to look like this. You better not be too much of this or too much of that. It's women that we do. That's why I have so many women on my show. That's why I think I have so many female followers. There needs to start to be a movement in the world that tell these beautiful people, our female sisters, that you're incredible.
Yes.
Because you know what it's probably like, men, you know, we don't get this, but do you know how hard it is for someone to walk in a room and no one ever sees them? No one ever acknowledges them? And we make such a big deal about certain elements of certain women. And I think a lot of women are constantly thinking, I can't live up to that. That's not me. I don't have that. I wasn't born with this. And I'm going to tell you, you're beautiful and you're special and you're enough in your way. It's the most important thing. So many people go through their life right now not feeling good about themselves, men and women. Yeah. But I think it's more pronounced with women because of everything they're subjected to hearing about themselves all the time. And so I just want to be a voice to message the other way.
Yeah.
Say it's completely not true. You're spectacular.
And I'm on board 100% with you on this. Yeah. Along that same line, you talk about self-doubt. You talk about, am I enough? Mm-hmm. And then I love this analogy you give about scratching out the CD.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It's actually a brain technique that we could go to a little bit more specificity on it another time, but you think in videos in your mind. So you're thinking in movies all the time. And so what happens is you have this image and you play it over and over and over and over, and it reinforces this belief you have. A belief is like, it's kind of flimsy when you first believe something, but your mind goes to work on getting references for it to make it like a table where there's more legs on it. So you think, I'm not attractive, or I'm not smart, or I don't belong here. And you start to find these references, and now it's immovable. These references are like movies or like a song you play.
Yes.
And so for me, when something comes in self-doubt, I scratch it. I literally, I could picture the image scratching it. Little things like when I watch a show on cancer and I think I could get cancer, scratch it. And I literally visually in my eyes close and I scratch the DVD. I scratch the record. Shows you how old I am.
Yeah.
Scratch the CD. Because if you scratch it enough, that record can't play.
Right.
And so you physically scratch your mind. So when I have self-doubt, I get it as much as anybody does. What I do is I acknowledge it and I'm aware of it and I know it's not my thought. All of the self-doubt in your life, this is what you have to accept. Every single thing you doubt about yourself is not your thought. It is not your thought. It's the thoughts that were given to you when you were defenseless between birth and 8 years old. Whether that's don't do that, don't touch that, get your hand away, do this. It's something at school. It's something someone said to you when you were a young person, and these beliefs ended up being in there, and you have gone to find references for this crap all your life.
Yeah.
And so when I have self-doubt, I was on the red carpet last night at the Grammys. Self-doubt, people said, no one wants to talk to me. I'm not on reality TV. I'm not Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm not this guy. I'm not. It starts happening. I'm like, scratch it. That's something when I was a kid where I wasn't the cool kid, right? And I found millions of references. I scratch it. And I walk boldly. And surprisingly, 6 of the 7 people interviewed didn't know who I was. They were interested in my stuff. And when I walked into the event, I couldn't get over how many of the actors in there came up and thanked me for my content. So had I listened to that thought that wasn't even mine, I'd have blown that whole evening for myself.
And how great is this that you just said that? Because look, you're a real person.
Sure.
We're all the same. But it's the technique. When they enter, get rid of them.
It's just strategies.
Everybody
needs to
know.
You know, you say I'm a real person. When you find somebody who's sitting here giving you all kinds of answers on this stuff, let me tell you why they're here. You want to understand this? Necessity. When you find someone who's really good at personal development or confidence, it's because they came from such a bottom place. I had to find these strategies because I was so insecure, so much self-doubt, so little self-confidence that I had to find a way out of there. And so that's why I kind of, usually when you get someone in this space, it's like, we were really insecure. And that insecure self-doubting dude, he's right here all the time. And he's coming for me all the time. I'll never think I've outrun him. I just have all the weapons to keep him away. That's all.
Yeah. Signs. We have to look for signs, right, when they come. You told a story once that touched me. You were in a restaurant with a friend. They asked you what you were grateful for. You said, nothing. Then, walking by you were a couple of cancer patients.
Yeah.
And it just changed your whole perspective.
Yeah, I was a real jerk. So, my buddy was asking, I was going through a tough time, and he asked me, hey, what are you grateful for? And I was being honest with him. I said, you know what, man? Nothing. Everything sucks right now. My life's a mess, blah, blah, blah. I'm broken. You know. And simultaneously, two people came walking by, purely both had cancer, and one of them stopped at my table with a beautiful smile and said hello to me, and then walked away. And she was super frail. She was wearing a bonnet. Her hair had fallen out. And I watched her, and she was about my age, too. And I just went, excuse my language, I just went, you're such a dick. You're just a jerk. Like, really, man? You, my buddy was, really? You have nothing to be grateful for? Nothing? What you look like, your health, your voice, the fact that you're alive, and you've got time in front of you, you've got a family who loves you. You have nothing to be grateful for. What the hell is wrong with you? And it was a breakthrough. It was like, you know what, man? If you're only going to be grateful for really big things, like in order for me to feel grateful, I got to have this, this, and this. We all have this checklist. If I had this, this, and this, then I'd be grateful. And I learned in that moment to be grateful for little things, like the water coming out of the shower, like basic stuff, like, you know, how nice my sheets feel when I wake up in the morning, that I have a roof over my head, that I have a loving family. And so I do a thing called an emotional flood, where I just flood myself with images of the people, places, and things, and moments in my life I'm grateful for. I'm a gratitude addict, because it's the antidote to all the negative emotions in your life. And I have them. And so my weapon against sadness, depression, frustration, fear, is almost always gratitude. And that moment told me that I needed to shift that in my life. I have all of this abundance in my life to be grateful for. And this beautiful person really was going through a tough time. And not only was she super grateful for being in that place, but she gave me the gift of her kindness at the same time. And so I collected those two things, and I've never forgotten. I'm really glad you asked that.
That's awesome. A couple quick things, and then we're going to have to wrap up. I know you have a lot going on today. So thank you. First of all, thank you again
for
your time right now. So I talked to you a little bit off air about our youth. And I feel an obligation to really empower our youth to max out.
Yes.
You know, to help our young guys start a podcast.
Yes.
Write a book. Mm-hmm. Do things early on so you can get ahead.
Yes.
I just want to get your thoughts on
that. Well, I love that you're that way, and I'm really glad you said it, because there's some counter messaging out there. People say, you're young. Cool it. You got it forever. Well, what if someone said that to Steve Jobs?
Exactly.
What if someone said that to Zuckerberg or Mark Cuban or myself or Kylie Jenner or you name any litany, Taylor Swift, right? Anybody that's young. Lots of people are winning young now. In fact, with these things called smartphones and the internet and these different businesses like podcasts and stuff like that, you can be successful at any age, 12, 13, 14, 18, 22, or 82, right? Age is literally not a factor anymore. So if I was talking to young people, I'd say, get after them, try things, experience things. You have some ingenuity. Try to do things that are unique and innovative that challenge you, that you would enjoy. I'm a believer that this is going to be the first generation. If you took, like, you know, Roger's age, 12 to about 25 right now, I don't even know what that generation would be called.
Z or something.
This, right. This would be the generation that's going to turn everything. They're going to revolutionize the world. They're going to be starting businesses earlier, making a difference earlier, contributing to people, being influencers on social media, innovating in fashion and music and in life strategy and in faith and in fitness and all these places. All of this innovation is going to come from that generation of people. If you're in that group, go for it, man. Buy things, girl. Like, get after it. Stir it up. Partner with some friends. Mix it up. Experience your life, because what technology allows you to do is to have the wisdom. So following someone like me or you gives you access to the wisdom of a 40 or 50 or 60-year-old person when you're 17, just like that. This didn't exist when I was that age. I had to go out and learn all this. There was nothing like this. Now it's at your fingertips. So if you go access it and plug into someone like myself or others, you can go create right now. So that's what I would say to young people. Young people are going to change the world. That's the corniest thing in the world. Except now, it's a flipping fact. Young people are going to change the world because of the access they have, the innovation. And people like our sons have been raised in this space around positive, uplifting, thought-provoking people. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen now is amazing.
Great. Thanks for saying this. If you pulled out your cell phone right now, call the 20-year-old Ed, what would you tell me?
Boy, great question. One, I would say, you are enough, which is what I was saying to the ladies and the men earlier. I would say, you are enough, young man, and there's greatness in you. You're born to do something special with your life. But I'd also say, 20-year-old, someday you're going to be 47, and someday you're going to be 77.
And someday you're going to be 127 and you're going to leave here. And when you leave here, you're going to hopefully go somewhere better than this. And when you get there, you're going to get introduced to the person you could have been. There was a destiny version of you, Mr. 20-year-old, that's coming. There's a man you're capable of becoming. Has experiences, memories, contributions, different enterprises he started, different people's lives he's affected. You're going to meet this person you were capable of being someday. And when you meet him, you're going to be in heaven if when you meet him, you're identical twins. Hell, young 20-year-old Mr. Milet, would be that if you meet this person someday, you're complete strangers. So start to chase that person. Start to chase the person you were destined to be. Start to chase the ultimate maxed out version of you, because you're going to get introduced to him someday. And heaven forever is that you maxed out this life and became twins with that person you were capable of becoming.
Incredible. Never heard it phrased that way.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Love that. Last question, then. At the end of the day, you still have a lot of life to live.
True.
What do you want your legacy to be?
Yeah.
What's the mark you want to leave on this
earth? Right. So I'm interested in no personal legacy, but my legacy will be my children, my family, and hopefully the billions of people that I've reached. I would like the message that I have and the way that I teach it, hopefully it evolves and improves over time. But I would like that legacy to be that hopefully the consciousness of the world, that in some small way, the stuff I'm putting out there, the difference I'm trying to make, alters the consciousness, alters the world. It sounds corny, but we're a better world because of the billions of people that I've reached, the people that may not have had maybe they haven't had someone believe in them, they need me to believe in them. Maybe they need somebody to teach them how to produce these results in their life. And if I could do that, you don't need to remember me. Just pay it forward. Someone helped me. Lots of people helped me. I want to pay my part forward. And then when I'm done, you can forget about me. And then you all pay it forward to billions more people. And we just transform the planet over many generations.
Love it.
Yeah.
Ed Milet, welcome to the American Real family. You are a class act. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it, brother.
Thanks for tuning into American Real. Be sure to visit our website, AmericanReal.tv, or search for us on iTunes or YouTube for past episodes. While you're there, please rate us or leave us a review, as that helps others find our show. I am truly grateful and appreciate all of your support. At American Real, we're on a mission to help as many people around the world fulfill their dreams and obtain their goals. If you'd like to be part of our inner circle or want one-on-one coaching, check out the American Real Learning Academy, where we have self-help groups and courses so you can build the best you. We also have a new Facebook group where you can connect with high achievers from around the world. If you want to go even further, maybe you're determined to write your own book or launch your own podcast, contact me today to see if we could help. You can reach me through Instagram or Facebook, or email me directly at roger@americanreal.tv. And speaking of podcasting, our next course will be starting soon. So if you're interested in launching your own podcast, join me at Podcast Your Passion. I'll take you through my 8-week course where I'll mentor you to build a world-class podcast. I'm only taking on a small group of people who want to share their passion through broadcasting, where I'll have you up on iTunes and YouTube within weeks so you can podcast your passion. Click on the link below for more information. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.